Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Frisch, Judge Schmidt, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. I'm just going to take a minute here to set up. I know, I feel like a child. There we go. Okay, good morning. Welcome everybody to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. We have four cases on our oral calendar this morning. The first case is A24-0577, Stephen Sawyer et al. Respondents versus trustees of the Patricia A. Boland Revocable Trust Agreement dated June 4th, 2012 et al. Appellants. Counsel, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal argument. When you begin your argument, please state your name and the party or parties you represent for the record. The podium toggles up and down, so when you get there, take your time to get it adjusted for yourself. Counsel for appellants, appellants has 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. And this is being live streamed, but we will keep only an audio version of the argument on our website, public website. And with that, I believe we are ready for counsel for appellants. Did you find it's sort of at waist high? It's like a toggle. There we go.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Stuart Elger, and I'm appearing today on behalf of the Bolands, who are appellants in this matter. The Sawyers sued the Bolands in 2022, asserting that they had adversely possessed a portion of the Bolands' lakeshore property on Lake Marion in Dakota County, where the Sawyers and the Bolands' two properties shared a common boundary. After a bench trial, the trial court agreed, in part, concluding as a matter of law that the Sawyers and their predecessors in interest had openly, actually, and exclusively occupied a portion of the Bolands property on the property line over a continuous 15-year period with hostile intent by virtue of overhanging branches that extended from the Sawyer property over the property line. The trial court found that these branches prevented the Bolands from using the ground underneath the branches, and so the ground was effectively occupied adversely by the branches for the statutory 15-year period. In this conclusion, the trial court erred as a matter of law because the doctrine of adverse possession requires substantially more notice to a property owner as to the neighbor's adverse intent to possess and occupy the owner's property then provided by the slow and gradual growth of a neighboring tree and its tree branches over the property line. The notice required is that the claimant intends to appropriate the disputed land to the claimant's permanent and exclusive dominion and benefit, and it must be calculated to inform the real owner of hostile intent. It must be manifest to the record owner, in this case the Bolands, from the nature and quality of acts asserted and the situation of the property, that this occupancy, this asserted occupancy, is hostile. It must be unambiguous. It must be unequivocal notice to the record owner that the asserted use is hostile. hostile to the claim of title. Yes, Your Honor.
Can we just talk about the difference between, I think you would agree, there's a difference between branches that might overhang a property that are 20 feet in the air and branches that overhang a property that are touching the ground. There's a difference in quality and encroachment on property, or do you disagree with that?
Your Honor, these cases are fact dependent. There's no question about that. And so if the circumstances were different, if the branches were different, it's conceivable that the result might be different. But in either case, it's certainly possible that someone could assert that branches that are up higher were, you know, caused the same effect, that prevented the other owner from using that area.
And in this case, it seems that the district court made findings that since 1973, there were branches that were on the ground, the branches from the trees encroached on the ground that prevented the use of the property, and then made some credibility determinations about the parties' respective testimony on that point in paragraphs 22 and 23 of the order.
Your Honor, I would say that that is the respondent's argument, that the trial court made findings, or that there was evidence adduced at trial that these branches were on the ground. But that was not the facts in this case. And ultimately, the trial court did not conclude that the tree branches covered the ground, were on the ground, invaded the physical space, and instead concluded that the branches being low to the ground were such that the space couldn't be used.
I mean, in 23, the district court does say that the branches touched the ground and hung over the sloped area.
And yes, right? And I would say that the fact that the branches touched the ground is not the same as saying that the branches covered the ground, occupied the ground, and were effectively, for example, being trod upon by the owners.
So is it your position, just so I understand it, that you're claiming that there's nothing in the record that could have supported the district court's conclusion or finding, factual finding, that the branches encroached on the ground such that it deprived your client of the enjoyment of the property? There's zero evidence in the record that could support that conclusion.
That the branches were on the ground, that they covered the ground, that they were a physical invasion on the ground.
That they touched the ground?
There is evidence that at some point they touched the ground. But these branches that are being asserted hung over a slope. The evidence at trial was that where the trees existed, there was approximately a one-foot flat area toward the Bolin property, and then the land sloped away. Initially, when these trees were planted, a neighbor testified that they were about 5 feet in length. There is no evidence that as the land sloped away, which was the Bolin property, toward the Bolin driveway, that these trees occupied the ground in the sense that they sat on the ground or covered the ground.
And just to state it a different way, you're claiming that the nature of the encroachment on the property was not in such a manner that it invaded your client's ability to exercise control over the property. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
But you have to keep in mind in this case, Your Honor, the situation of the property. This property was on the edge of the Bolin property. It was already in a sloped area that was not used by the Bolins except for storing their watercraft and other equipment up onto the slope. It was an area that wasn't gardened. It wasn't. It was mowed to the extent that there was grass there. This was not a property that the Bolins were using or would have reasonably used for a structure or some other purpose where these tree branches would have interfered significantly with their use. The advent of the branches made the use of this area more difficult, surely, But the Bolins were able to continue to use the property for the purposes they had already been using the property, which was to store their watercraft and so forth. And there are photographs in the record that show their watercraft, the sailboat and canoe and other pieces of equipment of the Bolins up into that area under the branches. So the situation of the property was such that branches coming over, even if they were low to the ground, weren't unequivocal notice to the Bolins that the Sawyer or their predecessors were asserting a hostile right to occupy the area under the branches. One reason they weren't on notice of that, Your Honor, is that there are none of the indicia here that are typically associated with that sort of assertion. There was no enclosure of the area by the Sawyers. There wasn't a fence installed. There wasn't another line of trees or hedges that were installed on the asserted area that the Sawyers claimed or their predecessors might have claimed that they asserted. Keep in mind, one of the owners testified, that was the Nelsons. They owned the property from 2005 to 2013, and their understanding, which they testified to at trial, was that they had no right to use the area that the Sawyers now assert was adversely possessed. But there was no enclosure put in place. And in cases where the appellate courts in Minnesota have found adverse user by such acts as mowing, for example, the activity almost always comes up to some sort of line or some sort of demarcation that operates like an enclosure, a fence or a hedgerow, for example. In addition, there's no structure here. There's no...
Well, counsel, the piece that I'm struggling with is the trial court made at least 12 credibility findings that I counted that were either against your client or favored the other side. And within that includes the planting of the trees in 1973, as Judge Frisch mentioned in paragraph 23 and 26 along those lines. How do we overcome those credibility findings in order to rule in your favor?
I don't think you need to reverse the trial court on the basis of credibility findings, Your Honor. I don't think it's necessary in this case. Even if you accept the testimony of one of the principal witnesses from the Sawyers, Mr. Klausler, who had been in his home next door since 1973, the evidence was that he didn't see the Bolins carrying out any activity in this asserted area. He said he didn't see the Bolins trim the trees that in 2013. That was one of the credibility issues. The court concluded that it was less credible that Mr. Bolin trimmed the trees up on the Bolin side of the property in 2023. Because there was testimony from another neighbor, Ms. Bogert, that she didn't see Mr. Bolin trimmed the trees up. And there was testimony from the Nelsons that they had done some tree trimming toward the end of their occupancy of their parcel, the Sawyer parcel. So, I mean, even if you accept Mrs. Bogert's testimony or Mr. Klausler's testimony that they didn't see the Bolins carrying out this activity, I mean, it all goes, their testimony, even if taken as true, all goes to the conclusion that this particular area was not one that was used by the Bolins in any kind of way that the advent of trees onto that part of their property would have signaled to them, there's an assertion here that these tree branches now are preventing me from using this area are adverse. There was uncontroverted that the Bolins continued to use that area with their boats and other equipment the way they had before. They mowed. There was some dispute about who was doing mowing, but there was no testimony that the neighbors, the Sawyers or their predecessors, came down onto the Sawyer property or the Bolin property and mowed up the sloper and used the property that way. The Nelsons certainly didn't, and Mr. Klausler testified that he didn't see the Andreessens, who owned the property from 73 to about 2005, use the Boland property to get to this area. And Mr. Klausler testified that he mowed the Sawyer property once when Mr. Andreessen was either ill or had passed away, and Mrs. Andreessen was not feeling well, and that he had a hard time getting around the tree. But he also said in response to a direct question from counsel for the Sawyers that during the Andreessen ownership of the property, this was a rough bank. It was, and that would go back to 1973 when the Andreessens were owned the Sawyer property. So that testimony taken together supports a conclusion that this property was one that was essentially in its natural state, its wild state. The tree branches didn't change that, and it wouldn't have been reasonably possible for the Bolands to see those tree branches and say, "Oh, that's an invasion of our property. We're not able to use the property in its natural state that we're able to use it before."
But it seems that you've got the hurdle to overcome both the credibility findings and that our standard of review is clear error for the district court's factual findings. And there are a lot of factual findings, and the record as a whole, to me anyways, supports the idea that this is exclusive use by the people who own the Sawyer's property where they put in these trees. And that I don't understand how that's not notice to the Bolands to say, here is a whole line of trees that we are hired a contractor and planted, and then later gets ripped out and turned into a garden.
Simply because, Your Honor, that those tree branches didn't exclude the Bolands. I mean, so that's the error. You know, if the trial court concluded that the branches prevented the Bolands from using the property, that and so doing that those branches occupied the property, they didn't. They didn't exclude, and there was no evidence. You would have to infer from those tree branches that the intent, there was a hostile intent on the part of the Sawyer's predecessors to exclude the Bolands. That's the law, and that's where the trial court erred.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondents.
Now I feel like a little kid. May it please the court, my name is Tamara O'Neill Moreland with the law firm Larkin Hoffman, and I represent the respondents, Stephen and Wendy Sawyer. I'd like to start by making something very clear. This is not a case of overhanging branches. If it was a case of overhanging branches, the Sawyers would have received what the full scope of the adverse possession parcel that they requested. This is a case about spruce trees that had branches on or near the ground since 1973.
Can I ask you just to paint a picture to make sure I understand it? So if we have the Bolands property, driveway, then is it the retaining wall? And then is it a slope up? And then the trees on the neighbors?
Okay, so the retaining wall was put in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that time, there were the trees, and then a small flat area, and then they sloped down.
Toward the Bolands.
Toward the Bolands. And then at the very bottom of that slope was a little grassy area and a driveway. So when we talk about,
and
you know.
Go ahead.
But going back to 1973, when you see the evidence where it said that the tree branches extended out 5 feet and down the slope, they were, upon planting them, because they were full-size trees when they got planted, they were already occupying that entire area down the slope. And when we fast forward to 2016, they put in the retaining wall. They take out 2 to 3 feet of the slope, according to the witness who owned the Sawyer property at that time. They take that out and they put in the wall. That's why when you look, compare the pictures from pre-2016 and after 2016, they look a lot different. And there's a very large area that's covered before that boulder wall goes in. By the time that goes in, the trees have been trimmed up and you can kind of see the way it looks today.
So what is wrong? I mean, you know, for those of us who live on small lots, trees extend into the neighbors, including, as is my experience, a cedar tree that went across the neighbor's yard, you know, and they would then have to mow a lot around it. In order to avoid that appearing, what's wrong with the argument that in order to avoid that appearing to be a hostile use of the neighbor's land, what do they have to do? Insist on shearing off that tree so it doesn't cover? It just doesn't seem, the trees were planted on the neighbor's property, the trunk. They extend into the neighbor's lawn. That's a very typical condition. And then I understand the argument is we didn't use it for anything else, so how would that be, by permitting this nice screening of these spruce trees by my neighbor, which benefits both, why is that a hostile, adverse possession?
Because hostility isn't hostile like we would use it in everyday language. It's just an intention to possess it to the exclusion of the other party.
Right, and if they're saying, we weren't using it for anything else, so you just using it by having your tree branches covered is consistent with my use, which was virtually none. It was just a slope that we would put.
Well, I disagree that that's what the testimony said.
Okay.
Because they were very clear in their testimony, the Bolins were, that they used that area, that they had a fence in that area at one time, that their horses grazed, and then the Andreessens planted these trees and took up part of their property, and they didn't say anything. And they also knew that it prevented access, because when you ask the question of, you know, doesn't this prohibit access? And the answer was there's no evidence of that. There was some pretty clear evidence of it, because Mr. Boland himself specifically testified that during the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there was no use of the adverse possession parcel because it was blocked by the trees. And Ms. Weston also testified that this was worthless runoff hill, nothing would grow there because of the trees. So both of the parties that testified on behalf of the Bolins admitted that the trees were what were prohibiting access. Prior to that time, they talked a lot about how much they used that area and how important that area was to them.
What was the evidence about the use of the slope prior to the plant? Aren't we mostly talking about the flat area and the slope at this point?
Correct.
So how was the slope used?
They talked about the fact that they had a fence in that area at one point, and that fence was taken down when the Andreessens bought the property, that they grazed their horses in that area. I don't remember all their testimony, but they were saying that they used that area and it was vital to their property.
Is there another case that you can point us to where, what case law should we look at to support the idea? I'm just looking at, you know, the conclusion in 112. In some, the planted and existing spruce trees constitute an exclusive hostile use, et cetera. And there are other findings in there, too, which seem very specific to the trees. What is another tree case when it's planted on someone's property where the extent of the branches of it constitute or support an adverse possession?
There isn't. Okay. In Minnesota, there is no tree case on point. There's no extended overhanging branch case on point in Minnesota. The cases that they cite to are actually from different jurisdictions, but in both of those cases, the court talked about the airspace and how you cannot adversely possess airspace, and so overhanging, you know, that you can still use underneath the tree would not constitute adverse possession, and those are the ones they cited from other jurisdictions.
Was there any evidence relied on by the district court, evidence that there was any other type of encroachment into the property besides the branches of the spruce trees?
Yes, I believe the court ruled that They had testified, Mr. Klosser had testified, that the Andreessens had maintained around the spruce trees for the entire time they had the parcel, that Mr. Klosser himself, who helped out when Mr. Klosser passed away, also maintained around them. The Nelsons testified that they put mulch under them, that they were the ones that trimmed them up. And after that, Mrs. By testified that she actually put mulch all the way down that slope and planted plants all through that slope and did so every year. So there's a lot of testimony about the use of the area around the trees.
And there was,
I think, everybody agreed.
Storage? Didn't the Bys actually store some materials on the parcel as well?
They did.
Okay.
And I do want to address the claim that the Bolins stored things in that area or parked vehicles, because the district court did not accept their testimony on that, mainly because in exhibits 106 to 114, those were the pictures they used to show that they used the adverse possession parcel during this time. But all of those pictures show them parking below the slope. And even the 8.5 feet that was actually requested by the Sawyers didn't encompass the area where it was below the slope and was flat enough to park. So everything that they showed that they were parking outside the adverse possession parcel. And two witnesses testified that they never saw them ever park anything in the adverse possession parcel. And regard those pictures, actually said, no, that's not the adverse possession parcel. That's the flat area at the bottom.
Counsel,
go ahead.
Counsel, can I just follow up on one of Judge Smith's questions? And I may have misheard this, and I fully acknowledge I may have misheard this, but I was hearing from your esteemed colleague that it seems as though their argument is that as a matter of law, overhanging branches of any sort, including the sort here, cannot form the basis of a claim of adverse possession. And I later heard that maybe this is a question of fact, and perhaps we have to look at the individualized circumstances of the encroachment to determine whether there's hostile use of the property to the exclusion of others. What is your view on how we should be looking at this question?
I think the courts have all ruled on several occasions that adverse possession is an intensive question of fact. And so what constitutes all of the factors of adverse possession, you know, was it exclusive, was it continuous, was it hostile, that is all really fact intensive. I don't think you can say in Minnesota it's a matter of law that tree branches cannot constitute adverse possession, because there's no case law that says that. There is a case that I do want to talk about because they rely on it pretty heavily. It's Romans versus Nadler. And that was a 1994 case where they were claiming that eaves on a house that were hanging over a piece of property and dripping onto that property constituted adverse possession. And the court said, no, but it does constitute a prescriptive easement. And so they gave them a prescriptive easement, which is use over possession. And the main distinction on that is exclusive use. That's the main distinction between prescriptive easement and adverse possession, is exclusive use, because you need it for adverse possession and you do not need it for prescriptive easement. If those gutters were on the ground and blocking anybody's use of that, that would have given them that exclusive factor, which would allow them adverse possession instead of a prescriptive easement. So that's the case, I think, that is most on point.
Well, speak to this, but what I hear your opposing counsel say is that this property didn't have a use other than being sort of a slope and a runoff hill, whatever it was. And so the idea that they didn't park there, it wasn't the trees. In other words, I think I'm hearing, it's not the trees that stopped the use of parking, et cetera. That simply was not property that was used. It wasn't flat land where there was like a, you know, a a gym for kids or something, and now these trees start encroaching, is that they continued to, the available use of that property was before the trees, the same as it was after the trees, which is basically just, you know, a slope. And how can a neighbor give hostile use to that if they're not depriving them of use they otherwise could use it for?
The testimony at trial absolutely shows that that was not the case.
Okay.
Not only did they use that claim, the Bolins claim they used that area. I mean, there were hours of testimony about how they used that area before the Andreessens moved there, took down their fence, and planted these trees. So
the ultimate adverse property strip, there's testimony of how
yes.
they used that. And how and that was used because you say there was the fence on it and horses were on the side.
Yes, the Bolins had put a fence in this area. That's what they claimed during trial. Afterwards, their testimony is very specific about the fact that the trees prevented them access. If you look at the transcript at page 548, Mr. Bolin specifically testifies that they couldn't use the property starting in 1973 because the trees prevented access. And Ms. Weston, if you look at her testimony at the transcript at 329, she talks about how this it was a no-good-for-nothing washout hill, and then she says, because of the trees. So you have this contradictory testimony where they're talking about how they used this, how they had a fence on it, and how important this property was to them. And then they're saying, well, for these three decades, we couldn't have access to it, and it was worthless because of trees.
Did the district court make findings as to the pre-tree use of the property, that it was really important to them, that they had a fence, that their horses?
I believe the trial court made findings that, like, that was their allegation, that they had a fence on the property. But I'm not sure how deep the trial court went into that.
So it seems most of the findings are about the maintenance of the trees and the mowing and the use of the land after the trees were there.
And that's fair, because that's what we're looking at for adverse possession. It's not so much what you did with the property before. It's, you know, did that whatever your neighbor did that prevent you from using it? And they had to know, and they did know, because they testified they knew, that the trees were preventing them access to that property, that was making that slope a washout. There was a lot of testimony about how they, you know, they were claiming that they stored, you know, vehicles and such on that hill. And they claim that they've been doing that since the 60s. They didn't show any evidence of it, but that was their testimony that they've been using it for years. So I do think that they had to know when those trees went in and they were on the ground and they were out over 5 feet that they were now, you know, not being able to access. And that's how you need for hostility, is just the intent to prevent their usage. And if you plant fully grown trees that extend 5 feet out that prevent usage on the day you plant them, then you are intending to prevent usage. And there's no evidence that they didn't.
Well, they have to be on notice that there's a... That's going to... I mean, there's a notice element, right?
Well, they have to understand that... I mean, you can accidentally adversely possess, you know, you can do it without the person. It has to be visible.
Right.
So they don't have to physically be on notice. They just had to have been able to see it so they could be on notice. So if somebody does that and you turn your head for 15 years, you're still legally on notice because it was visible.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your argument.
Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, this is exactly the situation where the property was not useful to the Bolins because of its sloping condition before the trees even existed, and why the advent of these branches over this area did not significantly change the utility of this property for the Bolins.
Was there testimony by them that they used this property that ends up being the strip that we're interested in for parking vehicles and for I don't know, grazing horses and for containing a fence?
Right. There's lots of testimony that they parked their equipment there. Their vehicles were largely on that driveway or up farther south. They were over a bit. But on the property that's disputed, it wasn't vehicles that they were attempting to park up the slope. It was boats and other kinds of equipment that they pushed up into the area and leaned over. I mean, they couldn't.
That testimony was that the boats and other things, I'm sorry, I thought of a boat as a vehicle, whatever it is, they used it to store things.
Correct.
The slope. So it was used to store things, not just sit there wild. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you look at the testimony of Mr. Boland, John Boland in particular, he'll talk about that. He also says, Your Honor, by the way, that during the 70s, the 80s, and 90s, the area was largely just left in its natural state. It was an area where they stored equipment, boats.
So does that hurt or help your case, that they previously had a usefulness, a utility, beyond it just existing in a wild state?
It's helpful, Your Honor, because that's the way it was used after the tree branches came into the fore. And by the way, the trial court did not conclude that the tree branches, as of the date of planting in 1973, were adversely possessing the Boland property. The trial court uses 1993 as the start date, which is 20 years after, presumably. To take into consideration that it would take time for the tree branches to grow. It was simply not true that these were full-size trees as of the date of planting. The only testimony is from Mr. Klausler, who said that they were large trees. But the trial court found that the trees were maturing over time. There was no finding that as of 1973, these trees that had just been planted by the Andreessens were adversely possessing the Boland property. And as to the fence, there's no testimony from the Bolands that they installed the fence. The fence was there. It was installed. We don't know who installed the fence. Mr. Boland, when he was asked questions about, well, how did this property look when the Bolands purchased the property in the 60s, said, well, there was a fence up there, and there were photographs of their horses that were actually, I think, they were on their property and may have been over on the owner of the property in the 1960s, which was not the Andreessens. But there was no assertion that this adverse area was one that was used for horseback riding or horses, or somehow their horses were accessing this area for horseback use that now went away with the trees.
I have a question about your new trial argument. You're arguing now that the trees were a boundary. Was that theory raised during trial?
No, it was not, Your Honor. It was we sought a new trial on that issue because it was dispositive, and these trees are so close to the boundary line that we asked the court to open up the record and take additional testimony on whether these are, in fact, boundary trees. And if they are, and it's conceivable they are under Minnesota law, then there would be then the adverse usage wouldn't occur as a matter of law.
But isn't that a theory that should have been raised before trial and have discovery on it and then get testimony during trial? It seems like it's too late to do it in a post-trial.
It would seem in this circumstance, because this was a bench trial that under 5901, that the court could exercise its discretion and open up the record and take additional testimony on this issue. I agree that it could have been raised earlier, but wasn't. But there was an opportunity for a new trial on that issue or to open up the court's judgment on that issue, limited to that issue itself, which then could have been presented to this court in appellate.
Is it an abuse of discretion for the district court to not have done that? Is there a requirement the court must do this?
I think it's an abuse of discretion because it denied the Bolands a chance to articulate a theory that was dispositive, and in that case was a miscarriage of justice because they weren't allowed to, at that point, upon request, to make that case.
Wrap up.
Okay, just, sure. You know, on the issue of overhanging branches, I mean, this is about as close as I think you get to a categorical rule, even if the branches are up high or down low, because the policy that allowing a adverse possession by virtue of branches creates the issue that was talked about in the Romans v. Nadler case. And it pits neighbors against neighbors. It causes neighbors to be concerned, oh, I better go out and cut those tree branches down to the property line. Otherwise, I'm going to face an adverse possession issue.
I'm going to ask you, just in fairness, because the time we've gone over, don't have an opportunity to give more time. So if you had one wrap-up sentence, otherwise I think we know what you need or are asking for.
And I would say that there was no evidence of indicia of exclusive use. The Roman v. Nadler case is exactly on point, and I ask the court to give careful consideration to that decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you, for your briefing, for your arguments. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period. Thanks.